And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, off and running here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game, on yet another rainy, dreary, wet day here in the beautiful city of Nashville. Boys, it's almost weekend time. How's it?
I'm not going to lie. I had a little post-traumatic stress today driving in. I'm not going to lie. It was a little wet, and I'm on the same interstate that I just got in a wreck on. Had to overcome some demons this morning, but I'm here because I care that much about the people of Nashville, not you three idiots. I could not care less about you three knuckleheads.
You know what? Good, we hate you too.
It's about the masses.
All right, we're off and running, boys.
Damn you.
So you, I got literally want me to go to the underworld. Thank you for that.
Tell us how it is. Tell us how it is. Okay, I got a beef already. And this is no one's fault in this room right now. This is no one's fault in on the other side of the glass.
Oh, no, Chase just entered the room.
On this side of the glass, it's nobody's fault. But when we damn leave here in the morning at 10 o'clock, and then there's two other shows after us, why isn't there a damn jack in here for a headphone? What do they do?
It's in the same closet as the chairs.
It's like, why do people remove things from... from the studio room. I don't get it. If you remove it, put it back, damn it.
Derek, 602.
Put it back.
602, save some of
goodness.
This. Save some of this.
So you, here's what you got to do. You got to do what I did. I bought my own headphones, my own earbuds, my own jack, my own wiring, adapter,
what about
switch,
Gio? Did you bring your old Gio?
Huh?
You bring your old Gio? You said jack. I said Gio.
I'd go for some Gio right now, to be honest.
What the hell does that mean? Is that a bourbon?
You can make it a bourbon if you want to.
Is that made in Lynchburg?
You can have a bourbon with it if you want to.
Is that made in Lynchburg?
Can I point something out real quick that has just stood out to me?
What?
It's something that Derek does, and I kind of like it.
What's that?
You will work in like hell or damn into a sentence that doesn't necessarily fit, but true. You make it you.
That's true.
And you make it work.
But that's what I think. That's what I love about the English language. Yeah. Even bad words, good words, whatever. If you just use it in a strange way, sometimes people
you
got to
own it.
Yeah.
If you own it.
And to all the 6-year-olds listening right now, I apologize for my language.
If there is a 6-year-old listening to us at 6:02 in the morning.
No, that person's committed.
Yeah, he's damn.
No, literally. Literally, he's committed.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
We do appreciate it.
Like, hey, mommy.
Oh, God.
Hey, mommy. Derek just said, damn. That's the kid in the backseat is saying.
And I'd be like, son, don't listen to that slappy.
Well, here's the deal. If you don't like the jacks, what you got to do as a man who Chase just said that you own it. You own those two words and you slip them in. Why don't you own yourself some headphones? Go to Best Buy, buy yourself a jack and a cord.
I do own myself
some headphones. Actually, you don't even have to go. You just order it on Amazon.
Yeah, I do own myself some headphones.
Again, I would get you one, man, but it's locked up in the same closet as all the chairs. So
they're in the portal.
They're in the portal.
Yes, they're in the portal.
We are investigating the transfer portal and seeing what chairs fit our system. Yeah. And then once we find the right chairs and jacks that fit the system, we'll then recruit them against their own coach's wishes and say, hey, come to campus, buddy. Come to campus, guys.
We hear Barry Odom has some really nice chairs, so we're making calls.
We've been calling Missouri, and he's not happy about it.
I was going to say, it's going to take him off.
He's not happy about it.
Good stuff today. We've got Josh Ward coming up at the bottom of the hour. Teron Davenport, Lindsey Rally will join us today. Terry Crisp, so a lot of good stuff. But I think we got to begin with the Preds. They get a 2-1 win over the Kings. They've put together a little 2-game win streak.
They're in first place, boys.
I was just going to say, a 1 point ahead of Winnipeg.
Now first place.
Jets have 3 in hand, but you take what you get.
Who cares about the facts? Don't worry about facts. Facts don't matter anymore. Truth is truth. Truth isn't truth. I don't know. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. There's no second line scoring. The power play is terrible. Blah, 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 blah. First place.
Wow.
Right? Like,
did we say the blah, 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 blah?
No, I yada, yada, yada over the entire power play, actually.
Yeah.
You can never yada, yada, yada the power play, but I did anyway. I yada, yada the power play. And listen, they got a power play goal last night. You could see the relief on Kyle Turris's face when that puck goes in the net. He's got basically a wide open net to shoot from, and his face just is like, oh, thank God. Good pass, Philip.
Pay what you owe.
I still don't know what that means.
Every time I see Kyle Turris on the ice, that's all I think of.
Does that mean Stillman's in your head?
A little bit.
That's not a good place to be.
Mm.
But maybe he's in the coaching staff's head. Because what happened yesterday? Victor Arvidsson was dumped down to the second line, maybe to jumpstart Mr. Pay What You Owe Kyle Turris.
I think clearly when you put the best goal-scoring threat on the team right now, this year, at Forsberg is better, but you put Arvidsson on the line with the guy who can distribute and needs to get some action, I think that's very clearly what Lavi was doing yesterday.
So let's look at this. So Victor Arvidsson, I believe it was going back to December 31st, has scored the most goals in the NHL. So for basically the last 60 days, nobody has scored more goals than Victor Arvidsson. You take him off the Jofa line, and I think you can look at it two ways. First of all, you can say, wow, are we really taking maybe the best goal-scoring threat on our team and putting him down to the second line? But then secondly, it's kind of like, is that next-level thinking by Peter Laviolette to have the guts to do that?
I mean, he's done it a lot before. He's mixed up Jofa before in the past to get people jump-started. It's not a new tactic, and I think the time is right when you're playing against a team that you should beat. You're a heavy favorite against. You're at home. You're in desperate need of kickstarting some players before you get into the stretch run. Makes a lot of sense. And Lavi's done this in the past. So
I feel like sometimes when we talk about shifting lines and things like that, it's almost like, you know, when you look at an office building, the top floor, that's where all the execs are, and you bring somebody in, you're like, hey, we're moving you down to the fifth floor. I mean, it's not like it's that big of a deal. I mean, it's you want two scoring lines, and so he's taking the guy that's on a hot streak, and he's trying to put him with the second line to get it going. So
well, and it's,
we can't act as if it's a sort of a demotion, sort of speak.
I don't think it is.
It's a demotion. Like,
Doesn't Patrick Laine play on the second line? Or anything? I mean, he's the best player on their team.
Yeah, it's not like a football game where, you know, there's the first stringers and then the second.
Right.
No, it's, you know, hey, we're trying to, everyone's going to play the first three lines. Everyone's going to play. It's just working guys in and trying to fit guys in that complement one another. That, you know, if the first line's not playing well, we need to get the second line. You know, we might need to move a guy up, move a guy back just to get the lines to going. So I don't see it as a demotion. You see it as, hey, we're just trying to work this thing to get everybody going.
Yeah, because guess what? If Matt Duchene or Mark Stone or our Timmy Panarin come here, guess what line they're going to be on? It's not going to be the first one.
Are any of those guys playing hockey right now, by the way?
No, I think they're just like going to the movies.
Yeah, like all those guys. I don't know. I know Torts was rather colorful with how he described Panarin being out of the lineup on Tuesday night, of
did
course.
You guys
the same
see
night
what,
that Craig Smith was out, and I was like, yes, let my imagination run wild.
Did you guys see what happened in New York with the Rangers? That there are three guys that have been mentioned in all the trade rumors. They played, and Adam McQuaid got hurt.
Oh, no. So that's not – so Zuccarello and Hayes are still on the board then.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
Also, yesterday, Craig Smith was placed on injured reserve. And also yesterday – did you guys see Pred's Twitter reacting once the quote came out from Peter Laviolette about Victor Arvidsson? He said he had no update or something to that effect, and everyone was like replying to the tweets from all the Pred's writers. Oh my God, is Victor Arvidsson on the move? Are we breaking up the Jofa line? Like, are people serious with that?
I listen.
Like, I'm blown up. Like, you really think they're going to trade Victor Arvidsson in the chase for a cup?
You know my stance and theory on Twitter. I think Twitter is like the worst of all of the humanness coming out in real life. Like, I think we are all.
But
nice.
Apparently, Pred's Facebook is worse.
I don't even want to mention.
Oh
Facebook.
Yeah, don't you don't even want.
I don't even want to mention.
You don't
Facebook.
Even, you,
I don't
you
even
don't
get
want
on Facebook.
Anywhere near that pool.
I don't want to know all the things my grandmother's upset about today.
That pool hasn't had chlorine in it in years.
Yes, that's exactly. It's like the kiddie pool of social media. You're right. It's the kids.
I like that.
It's the kids' pool of social media. You know what else is in that water? I think. I just think we are so much nicer to each other in real life than we are on Twitter. We're so much less reactionary in real life than we are on Twitter. We are so much more reasonable and rational and thoughtful to each other in real life than we are on Twitter. And I think people forget about that because all we see is our phones all day. And we don't see that if I was talking to a Preds fan and I was like, and that conversation came up, we would both look at each other. We would say, nah, it's probably not going to happen. And that would be the entire conversation, right? Like, if you were talking with Preds fans at like Barrel House before a game, you'd say, "Yeah, I you know, that's clearly a misunderstanding," and they would go, "Oh yeah, that's what I thought," and that's it. That's all the conversation would be. But on Twitter, it's 47 people saying that the universe is going
to
end.
I think because everybody wants to get the last word, or everybody wants to get that few words that kind of put everyone else over the edge. Oh, I said, I never understood it. Like, fans.
We just want to tweak each other.
We love fans. We love the fans. We love them. But they don't know Jack. Like,
or Jill.
Like, what's going, like, I'm not saying about the game, like, watching it, because some of these fans know more than all three of us put together.
They know their teams.
They know their teams. Yeah. But as far as their workings, like, what's going to happen trade-wise, they don't know nothing.
Well, and I always say this, too. There's a very, very fine line between awesome fan and terrible human being. Like, you can cross that line where, like, all of a sudden you're poisoning somebody's trees on campus.
Oh, wow.
Or you know, the LSU Alabama people that got in a shotgun fight in a trailer park after LSU won a game and somebody died. And not even between an LSU and an Alabama fan. It was one Alabama fan shooting another Alabama fan because they weren't cheering hard enough.
Roll Tide, y'all.
So, but do you see, like, you can, like, if you're calling, there was a player for Florida that got, like, I think it was the 09 championship game that had his, like, car towed or whatever, and he broke into the towing lot to get his car back. And
good for him.
And Florida fans were abusing the owner of the towing lot. Like, Florida fans were calling this guy and being like, dude, don't press charges. What's your problem? And they were, like, pestering and bothering him because they were like, we need this guy in the championship game on Saturday. Don't get him in trouble. That's crossing a line between really good fan and bad human being. It happens very, very quickly. Like, the guy who threw the bulldog onto the court the other night. Mm-hmm. Did y'all see that?
Like, oh, I did.
Yep. Like, I get it. You thought it was going to be cute. You thought it was going to be hilarious. And you're a really big, passionate fan. And then you cross the line by being a dumb. I had so many other words in my head.
A giant dum-dum.
I had so many other words in my head that I wanted
to
say.
Do you ever, like, go through the process, like, when you're about to say something, go, can't say that. That's good.
Yeah, that's kind of what just happened.
All right, so the Preds get a 2-1 win over the Kings last night. Pecorine stopped 28 of 29 shots. Roman Josi with a goal and an assist. Terry Crisp will join us at 8:30. Lindsay Rally on the Preds, as well as Soup Sunday, coming up at 9 o'clock. But when we come back, how big of a truck is too big? And do you really need to let people know when you change your profile picture on social media? We'll get into that next. Hard-hitting journalism is on the way here on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, if the Vols lose in Baton Rouge, will there be panic in Knoxville? We'll get Josh Ward's perspective on that and many things Vols related coming up at 6:30. But before that, a couple of things to get to. We're going to get to a little truck conversation in a moment, but also the constable. It's been a couple of days since we've kind of weaved the constable's existence into the show. In his personal life, social media ventures.
Come
oh, we're
me.
Gonna come at you. So yesterday, I believe it was, or maybe it was 2 days ago, the constable updated his Twitter profile picture. Now, when you change your Twitter profile picture, you have the option of just doing it and letting it be, or you can let your followers on your timeline know that you changed your picture.
This is 22 hours ago.
Yes.
22 hours of new Avi pick.
Existence, yes. And so it'll be right there on your timeline as if you tweeted. Mm-hmm. And the constable chose
it was that option. Well, there is no, like, button that tells people to alert you of a new profile picture, right?
It shows up.
You just post it.
Yeah, you post it.
No, he posted
it,
a new tweet and hashtag new profile pic, which I think is not even normally people use AVI, which is short for avatar, right?
Well, Twitter, Mr. Braden, Twitter gives you the option when you change your pic, it will pop up.
Oh, that's
up.
New.
Yes, it will pop up with your picture, hashtag new profile pic, and you can say tweet.
I didn't know that.
I usually say no, and I guess this time I said yes.
Yeah, I don't think the masses really need to know that you change it. Let us come across it in our own time.
So you are correct. I admit the error of my ways, and I apologize to the masses.
No more controversy.
Right, moving on. Next topic.
Your controversy right there.
But doesn't Facebook do it automatically? Right?
Yeah. I think Facebook and Instagram does it automatically. No, Instagram doesn't.
Facebook does. You change it on Facebook, it automatically does that. But I did not know that Twitter featured that now. That's a new feature on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I have not changed my – Nick Cale changes his profile picture more than any human being I've ever met in my life.
I think Chase and I are in an arms race to do it.
Why do you do that?
I just got to keep it fresh.
I think it's smart because I've noticed since I started doing that, I get more followers.
I thought your last picture, though, was so good that I don't – like, sometimes you get to one where you need to settle on it for a while.
The black and white one?
Yes, where you're doing a live contemplation in your Twitter picture.
Here's why I changed it, because Kevin in promotions did such a fabulous job on my Chase McCabe Show logo. He used that picture, and I had it as the – what do they call the banner picture, the one that's up top?
Yeah, you're –
yeah, so I had that
the
one
backdrop.
Up there. Yeah, and so I didn't want to double up.
I just think I would rather go with one that makes me look like I'm contemplating the meaning of life and I look really important and serious and it's black and white versus one that makes me look like a sexual assaulter. This one's a little...
That's a little much.
This one's a little creepy, dude. It looks like you're sort of... Who are you talking to in this picture? Is it Craig Smith?
Peter Laviolette.
Peter Laviolette. So it looks like you want to slip something in Peter's drink here. Is what it looks like.
Wow.
I'm just saying, it looks a little...
I need to watch myself around Chase.
Chase is a really nice guy. He likes everybody. This is just it's a little creepy. I'm just saying, we all have our own opinions. I liked your last picture a lot.
Mm-hmm. Has Twitter jumped a shark?
No.
I'm very seldom on Twitter. It's
that's because you're all about the Instagram.
It's because you are spending 9 hours a day on Instagram.
I've never... I don't want to know that much news. Maybe because I watch the news that I don't need to know.
I think watching the news has jumped the shark.
Nah, I don't think.
Oh, no, that's changed. That's
Not now.
Jumped the shark. Now it's like the most popular thing
in
the world.
Yeah, about 3 years ago.
About 2.5. here's the thing, D-Mace. I think how we use Twitter is changing a lot, though. I personally, my New Year's intention, I'm going to use Twitter differently. I'm going to not take it so seriously. I'm going to acknowledge that it's not the real world. I'm going to try to remember those things before I get super irate and send out some crazy tweet where I'm like, oh, this really isn't that big a deal. I need to calm down and relax a little bit here. I largely read just mentions and then lists. I don't read Twitter like I don't read it like as part of my daily consumption of media. I read I've got a Preds list, right, where I put all of my Preds people into the Preds column, and so I'll go through that and peruse that to make sure if there's anything I've missed. But I largely just read the people that interact with me. So if you send me a message, I want to go back and forth with you and interact with you. I read my mentions, and there's some people that don't read their mentions at all and only read the actual tweets,
sure.
Right? And
yeah.
So I don't spend time reading because I find myself just getting more pissed off all the time. If I just am reading Twitter, I'm like, that sucks. I don't agree with that. That's wrong. I hate this. I hate you. I hate that. So I'm like, I just got to stop that. And I stopped, and now I don't do that anymore. I'm a healthier, happier person because of it.
Okay, but now, are you happy about your current automobile situation? Because you had a very interesting question this morning pre-show.
So you guys know how when you rent the car, you sign up for one thing, and then they go, well, here's what we got on the lot. You end up getting something totally different every time. So I was like, yeah, just give me the smallest, give me a regular, sedan. I'm going to have it for probably a couple of weeks until the truck is deemed totaled, and then I have to go buy a new car, and that don't get me started on that whole process, but insurance companies. But I was like, yeah, give me this one at this price, and it was probably going to be a regular sedan, and that was it was a good price, and I was like, I'm probably going to have it for a while. And then he goes, all right, I'll see what I got on the lot. He comes back and he goes, oh, I got full-size trucks. I go, well, can I put two car seats in the back? Because I have two children. Uh-huh. Is this a single cab? What do I need? I need space for car seats. He goes, no, it's four doors. It comes around and it is a 5.7-liter Hemi engine Dodge Ram massive monstrosity. It is a beautiful truck. It is a wonderful truck. Mm-hmm. I don't know, unless you are a construction person in the world of construction, or someone who hauls large farm animals, I do not know why any human being would ever need a truck that size. I do not understand it.
Yeah.
I've wondered that as well.
I can't get it in. The gas mileage is terrible. I can't get it into the parking garage at the Music City Center when I have to go to work. It's impossible to park in this parking lot because these little miniature parking spots over here, it takes up three of those. Mm-hmm. So I can't park over there.
Is it just a Southern thing?
I think it is.
I mean, granted, I saw trucks like that in Philadelphia with people that didn't
really
work in construction.
No, but the jacked up truck that's just
right.
Yeah. I'm trying to make up for something.
That's what I'm wondering. Are you trying to compensate for something else?
Yes. Possibly. I thought you got that truck because of the rain and you were going to pull the ark. That's what I thought you got to drive.
I'm telling you, I was driving down 40 today, and I was going like 11 miles an hour.
I'm sure you were.
I was a little nervous driving down that road
that
again.
That Joker would pull the arc. That big thing.
That
you
thing
got,
is huge.
Yeah.
Because like my buddy, in right after college, he bought a Ford F-150. Now that was big, but it wasn't like obnoxious. And then after he got married, he upgraded either to the 250 or the 350, and this thing was just a tank.
The 350 is huge. It's like the original Ford Excursion. Like
but he works in an office.
Right. And this brings me to another. I'm going to rip on something else here. And we've talked about this. Daycare parking lots is the Lord of the Flies of parking lots. There are no rules in the daycare parking lot. And if you have a bigger car than everybody else, you make the rules. So there's this one woman that parks at my daycare who picks up her one small child in a car that could haul all of humanity, and she doesn't ever get it into a spot ever. So she's taking up two spots, or like hanging out in the driveway, or she's in a handicapped spot. And I'm like, I know you're not handicapped, and it's just like, there are no rules. Uh-huh. It's like Lord of the Flies, like every man for themselves in the daycare parking lot. And now I got a big truck, so I'm gonna go in there. Take up two spots.
Hold on, is your truck bigger than her truck?
It might actually be a little bigger. She had like that giant. She's got like one of those giant like suburban style like Denalis or whatever.
Oh, those things!
And it
huge.
Never is in a spot. She can never get the thing into the spot right.
Those trucks, man. Because when we went to
buy a Kia, lady.
We went to
come on
Miami this past weekend for the college visit, and Marcy went. She kept asking me like, Derek, what car do you want? Because DJ and I complained the last trip so bad. She was just like, you know what? Y'all going to pick out the car this time. DJ wanted some fast car. I was just like, whatever. And we end up getting another car. And
So you and DJ
nor I like the car. But she was fine with it.
So you guys you guys are divas even when you're picking out cars.
Exactly.
Okay.
So she came to me. She was like, okay, y'all argued about the car so much last time. You picked the car. Here's what they got. And I said, okay, well, it was the...
You talking about rental?
It was the Tahoe, and it was a Suburban. And I wasn't even thinking. I just said, well, the Suburban, we're fine, the Suburban. And I'm thinking like, okay, this is going to be a regular size vehicle. Well, we got there, went to go check in at Hertz, got to the car. Man, that sucker was long.
You could put six DJs in there.
I said, nah. We're not driving this. She was like, no, you picked this car, no. And she was like, she just had this look on her face like, you
again?
Son of a.
Again?
Yeah. So we end up going back to the front desk, and she was like, this idiot back here wants a different car. She didn't say that, but she was like, no, he wants a different car. And then, so we end up getting a smaller version.
Do you ever notice that women can say the insult without saying the
insult? Oh, of course. They just look at you like you.
Well, and it's how they say things to other people. Like where she's like, excuse me, sir, we're gonna need a different car. And like what she's really saying is, this Joker is an idiot. And they know, they can do it without ever coming off as like sounding angry or anything. And they can just like, I wish I had that ability. I can't. I'm just like, you're stupid.
Okay, here's another one. Mm-hmm. This happened to us too the same night. And tell me, how would you guys have reacted?
Nick would have thrown the tree out.
So, I think Nick would have thrown the car. Like, if he had the kids with him, he would have went ballistic.
Car seats are getting tossed.
Exactly. So
Philly Nick shows up.
So there's a car next to us, and then there's two cars. Well, it's a car, like it's a spot that's empty, then there's another car over. And then it's us. So we get in our car, and they had already been in theirs, but we get in our car, and we pack up everything, and we're ready to go. Like, I put that thing in drive, and I'm getting ready to pull out the parking lot out of the Hertz building. The one of the workers comes zooming around and parks right in front of my car. Gets out, and he's getting something out of his car, I guess, to give to other people. I said, dude, it's 12 o'clock. My son's and Derek was, when he gets tired, he gets really cranky.
What is he, like, and, 4?
No, but he needs his sleep. That's one kid that, like, needs his sleep. Boy, he gets, like, really irritated.
Does he take naps?
Nah. You know, in high school, you can't take naps. He got so much homework and all this other stuff. But he just gets cranky, and we understand it. And he was hungry, too. So I'm getting ready to pull out just because I got to get somewhere to get him something to eat, and he needs to get to bed because we got to get up very early in the morning. This Joker comes around, parks right in front of us. Mm. Boom. Hit the park. Boom. Gets out and grabbing stuff. I'm like, I roll down my window. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to get out. My son's tired. He needs to eat. oh, wait a minute. I got to do something. I said, I went off. The minute he said, no, oh, he wait
him,
a minute.
Yeah,
oh, I went off, man. I completely went off. I'm like, you. It was just like, dude, you don't. Because you could have. There was a spot in between me and the other car. You could have parked in front of the other car or in front of, like, sort of the spot that was empty instead of coming right in front of me,
yeah,
parking, shifting that sucker and parking, getting out like, what
he,
up?
He went man press. He went man press on you.
Exactly.
He didn't play no soft cover,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely. I completely went off.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. My son was like, Dad. Oh, my goodness.
He jammed you at the line.
Really bad.
That's
I said, you just don't do that, man. That's just so disrespectful.
It's unacceptable. I do want to have a conversation about people that get hangry, though.
Hangry?
Yeah.
Yeah, people, yeah.
Because I'd like hangry. To discuss that
right.
At some point.
But I wasn't hangry.
We'll talk sports at some point today.
Not you.
Yeah. All right, it's Morning Drive. We're live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. When we come back, our man Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. They've lost to Kentucky. They had an ugly win against Vanderbilt. What will we get from the Volunteers tomorrow morning in Baton Rouge? Find out next here on Morning Drive. 6:32, welcome back into Morning Drive here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's shoot it up to Knoxville right now as we welcome in our man Josh Ward from WNML. Josh, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you guys.
So let's look at this team going into the weekend, but before we get to the LSU game tomorrow, what has been the overall general reaction over the last week to the basketball team? Obviously, you get the loss last Saturday at Rupp Arena, and then a very ugly win against Vanderbilt early in the week. What's the fan base reaction been this week?
Probably a little more positive than I would have expected if I had known the outcomes and just the way that Tennessee would play in the last two games. I think overall, Tennessee fans have remained optimistic about what Tennessee can do, and there might be a collection of reasons. Number one, just having seen Tennessee all season, and the sample size of the year versus 1 week should get more weight, and I think that it has. And then Kentucky deals with an injury. You know, you get Kentucky at home, LSU loses to Florida, so there's a little separation there again for you in the SEC standings, plus the head-to-head opportunity, and then Duke going down to North Carolina, not knowing the full status and what will happen with Zion, but I think that's caused Tennessee fans to, for the most part, say, you know what, one game, maybe two games, let's not make too much of that. Now, if Tennessee were to struggle against LSU, then I think that would change the conversation.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you, Josh, because I'm not sure I've seen what I need to see out of Tennessee to think that they're going to go into Baton Rouge tomorrow morning and win, and I just think the athleticism and the matchups are a problem. Now, Tennessee can overcome that. They've played well against Kansas and Gonzaga in the past, but if that does happen and they lose, you know, that's sort of what I've thought all week long. Do fans think of it differently? Do they view it more as not just a blip on the radar, not just a, listen, two road losses to two top 15 teams is nothing really that, it's not really that big a deal. Are fans going to overreact to this?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it could then swing way too far the other way. I think what would really be the concerning part if Tennessee were to lose to LSU would be just the schedule coming up. Now, Tennessee has an opportunity. If it's able to beat Kentucky, then Tennessee can still be in a good position to at least try to share the SEC title. The goal here is to win it outright. And to do that, winning at LSU is really important, because Tennessee's schedule moving forward is more difficult than LSU's. Now, we don't know what's going to happen. LSU was at home against Florida the other night and went down. They have to play again in Gainesville. But if Tennessee's going to try to win the SEC championship outright, well, beating both LSU and Kentucky would be a really good way to do that. Then you can afford a loss somewhere else. And realistically, it's going to be very difficult for Tennessee to go 5-0 with those two games, plus Ole Miss on the road, Mississippi State at home, Auburn on the road. Those are five quality opponents that Tennessee still has to play. So part of it as well is, how does Tennessee play? What if Tennessee and LSU both go out there and, for the most part, they're both playing really good basketball and it comes down to the final couple of minutes and LSU gets the win at home? At that point, I don't think the reaction would be too negative. There would be disappointment, and the conversation would quickly turn to, well, Tennessee better win out from here. But I think a lot of it will be, how does Tennessee play? If Tennessee loses by playing the way that it did against Kentucky and still dealing with some of the struggles that it showed against Vanderbilt, that would cause the really negative reaction.
Now, is this a team that you see based upon the last two games they played, Kentucky and Vandy, does this look like a team that's tired, that's just like physically tired after the getting beat up so much against Kentucky, and then playing a Vanderbilt team at home during the weekdays? Does this seem like a team that's just tired right now?
It didn't look that way the other night. Yeah. Bryce Drew said that after the game. Rick Barnes didn't argue that idea when it was brought up to him in his postgame press conference. And Lamonte Turner, when he met with the media after the game, said that he was looking forward to having an off day on Wednesday, which was really going to be focused on rest and recovery, and that's it, before they got back to work yesterday. If you think about this stretch, every team has to go through it, so it's not like Tennessee's the only team playing two games a week in the SEC, traveling a lot. But Tennessee, as deep as it can be, I mean, Tennessee can go play 7, 8, 9 guys. It hasn't done that very often, and when it has, the guys at the end of that rotation have not played a lot of minutes. The top six for Tennessee have played a lot of minutes this season, and that's maybe taken its toll. So let's see if that helps. Tennessee having played on Tuesday, so getting 3 days in between the game on Tuesday night against Vanderbilt and then LSU on Saturday. Maybe there's some mental fatigue as well. I think the idea was that Tennessee playing the way that it did against Kentucky, that it would come out and whip up on Vanderbilt. Obviously, that didn't happen, and shots didn't fall. That might come back to some of the fatigue for Tennessee as well. But part of it would be, even though they went to overtime earlier in the season, Tennessee probably had a good idea it was going to win that basketball game. Mentally, it has to be locked in this weekend, and that's been actually for a team that's made up of veterans and they played a lot of basketball. That has been one of the bigger challenges, making sure that they're ready to go upstairs, and against Kentucky they weren't. They better be against LSU for sure, because LSU knows as well on the other side this is a really important game, having lost to Florida just a couple of days ago.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, is joining us here on Morning Drive. So last Friday, Josh, after we got done with the show, the news came out that Jeremy Pruitt has decided that Derek Ansley, defensive coordinator, will actually call the plays next year. What was your reaction to that? Because I thought that was a positive if you're a Vols fan, because it shows that Pruitt is allowing and trusting in his staff. What was your takeaway from that?
Yeah, my first reaction was surprise. I did not anticipate that. There was an expectation that he was going to have a coordinator role, but then the question was, okay, is that a title that comes with arriving at Tennessee so they could hire him and give him a little more money? It's not that. It's a bigger role than I anticipated, and I think a lot of people did, with Jeremy Pruitt handing over the play-calling duties. I think there are probably a number of reasons. One, that's a sign that Jeremy Pruitt at least looked at his first year at Knoxville and said, maybe I'm doing too much here, trying to be the head coach, trying to run the defense and call plays during games. When he was asked why he was doing that last year, he said, I'm the best at doing it. And you couldn't really argue that fact, but it did make me wonder, okay, is that going to be too much to handle? So part of it has to be him saying yes. He also has to have, I think, legitimate respect for Derek Ansley. I don't think that Jeremy Pruitt would just hand it over to anybody. Which I think is proven. He didn't hand it over to Kevin Scherer or to Chris Rumpf, who were the co-defense coordinators this past year. He brought somebody else in who he has respect for. And then another question I have will be, all right, what happens next? Let's see how they play this season. Let's see how the defense performs. What if they have some struggles early on? What if Florida has a big performance, or Georgia or Alabama, which obviously could happen? If they do go through some growing pains together with a new first-time play caller and a team that's still trying to grow, and they'll probably have some young players out there on defense, are they able to fight through that? At some point, they probably will have to, and that'll be one of the on-field challenges for Tennessee this upcoming year.
So you're paying your coordinators $2.5 million. You've got one of the top 15 rosters according to recruiting rankings in America. We know that's not 100% accurate, but when you look at the recruiting rankings, it is what it is, Josh. This, to me, says raise levels of expectations. What are those expectations for Jeremy Pruitt in year two?
Yeah, and I think they're going to go up as we have this conversation during the offseason, which typically occurs, right? But I think it will be emphasized with Tennessee this offseason. I think Tennessee fans are going to look at the schedule and say, why can't we beat South Carolina at home? Why can't we beat Mississippi State at home? Missouri's got the NCAA stuff. Why can't we go beat them? And individually, I would say, yeah, Tennessee can win this game or that game. But collectively, it becomes more of a challenge. I think right now a lot of fans would say Tennessee better go win at least 7 games. And by the time we get to the summer months, fans are going to be saying 8 or 9 wins for Tennessee this year, which could happen. Year two is when you see the jump in college football for a lot of coaches who have big success at big-time programs. That's pretty well documented at this point. And I think Tennessee fans, with the staff that's brought in, the players that are coming in that will have a big impact immediately, is, again, based on their expectation. I think as we get to those big-time hype months of July and August, I think the win total expectation for Tennessee fans will probably go up pretty dramatically.
Now, Josh, looking at – I want to go back to basketball very quickly. Only got maybe a minute here. Looking at the Carolina-Duke game, the way Carolina was able to beat Duke, you're talking 4 freshmen against, you know, 4 guys on that Carolina team that are all upperclassmen. They've been together. They played a lot of basketball. They were able to beat the number one team in the country. Do you then kind of look at that and look at Tennessee's makeup, a lot of veterans on that team, guys that have played a lot of minutes? Does that give encouragement, you think, moving forward that, hey, we can, you know, beat a team full of one-and-dones because we've seen it done with Carolina versus Duke?
Yeah, I think the chemistry that Tennessee has built together, the experience that they have together on the floor, I think that's easily the biggest reason that Tennessee's players are confident in their ability to beat anybody, whether it's Kentucky again at Knoxville or a team like Duke that's loaded with talent if they were to play in the NCAA tournament. I also think that's why fans remain confident in this basketball team and them getting things figured out, that they've been through it. We're going to learn a lot about this team if they are able to rebound because of this 5-game stretch to close out the regular season that I mentioned. But easily, I think when fans look at Admiral Schofield being there and Grant Williams and Bone and about the amount of basketball that they've played, that's why everybody is confident and not really anybody is panicking right now on Tennessee's last week.
Josh, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Have a good weekend. We'll chat next Friday.
Hey, you too. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. We'll react to what he had to say as well as get into the Tennessee-LSU game tomorrow morning, bright and early, 11 a.m. start. We'll talk about that next here on Morning Drive.
I'm going to talk about Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. And that, of course, is why we're not using the other guys anymore. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling will take care of your home. It's not any more complicated than that. They will make sure to take care of your home. And that means everything is up and running smoothly, which means everything is running efficiently and effectively, which saves you money, both in the long run on your bills and on all those utility bills. And also, it saves you from the big repair. And if you have to have the big repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling can protect you there too, because they're going to offer you a variety of different financing options depending on what's going on with your house. So they're like the amoebic defense, right? They don't really have they're not really a scheme. It's front multiplicity from Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. If you have a small repair that just needs a small fix, they've got a financing option for that. If it's a huge new repair for an entirely new unit, they've got no interest 5 years. That's no interest for 5 years, 60 months. For qualified buyers on new equipment, if you need to make that big purchase, let Spring Hill Heating and Cooling be your emergency plan. They will take care of you. That's why we're not using the other guys anymore. Again, locally owned. You know I tell you that every single time. Nearly 2 decades of experience. I tell you that every time. And it's why you should be using Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. It's why my family is having Spring Hill Heating and Cooling come out to their house next week. They're in the Comfort Club. Why? It's comfortable. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Check them out. SpringHillAC.com. SpringHillAC.com is the website. And tell them Braden sent you.
All right, welcome back in, Morning Drive. So many things that we want to say. It's a good thing we've got 3 hours and 11 minutes left to do it. ESPN 102.5, the game. Vols LSU tomorrow, number 5 Tennessee at number 13 LSU, 11 a.m. tip-off on ESPN. If the Vols lose this game, are we going to have a mass reaction Saturday on social media that spills over Monday to this show? That the Vols were overrated, they're good, but they're not great.
Well, as I asked that question to Josh, I heard the words coming out of my mouth, like, do you think fans will overreact? And I was like, that's a stupid question.
They will.
Because of course they will.
To me, if they lose this game, mm-hmm. I think it's a really bad 7-day stretch. Maybe it bumps them off of a potential one line. Maybe they're not a lock to get to the Final Four. Even if this team loses, in my opinion, they're still an Elite Eight team.
They're still a good team. But then I start to wonder, though, because if you look at their schedule, Yes, they did beat one of the best teams in the country in Gonzaga. But they lost to Kansas. They would have lost to Kentucky. And then they would have lost to LSU. It would.
All top 15
yeah,
teams.
Yeah, it would kind of make you think like, okay, this team's good, but are they tournament Elite Eight good?
Well, I mean, if they finish 30-4 or whatever, I mean, that's a hell
yeah,
of a year.
I think we can put too much value. I think even the Duke-North Carolina game, certainly without Zion Williamson, but while it's not just another game for those fans, it is just another data point in your 35 data points. Like, it's just another one. You're going to play five or six games where you play great and shoot the lights out, and then you're going to play five or six games a year where you just can't make a single basket and you're going to look terrible and you might get beat. I don't think losing three games to top 15 opponents all away from home is really that big of a statement on whether or not you are or are not going to go deep in the tournament. I think this team's destiny is still all very much within its own control. I think there are troubling matchup trends that we are concerned about when it comes to how they matched up with Kentucky, maybe how they match up with LSU, how they would match up against these longer, more talented athletic teams.
So let's get into that. How do they counteract the opposition's length?
I don't.
You can't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you do it. And that's why I've always if Zion comes back and is on back on the team and is healthy, no one in their right mind should fill out their bracket with anybody other than Duke as the final champion. Like, it doesn't make any sense to put anybody else on that line unless you're just rooting. And that's fine. It's just. So I just don't know.
Do you try to get out and run more and play up-tempo basketball?
That's not what they do. I don't know if that's the solution. We need a basketball coach to probably tell us that. But I'm with Derek. I don't think there's a way. You can't coach size. Like, you just can't coach it. And so if you can double P.J. Washington in the post maybe and force him to pass out of it, the problem is he's passing to a lottery pick and Keldon Johnson, who could knock down any shot in the building. I mean, there's just not a lot of answers there.
Here's the problem, and this is why I keep going back to. I think they got to win one of these games versus these top, 10, 15 teams, meaning LSU or Kentucky. I know strength of schedule in basketball really doesn't mean a whole lot because you got Gonzaga, whose strength of schedule is 77th. But we know playing Gonzaga, they can beat anybody in the country. They're that good, and they've proven it year after year. But if you look at the teams that are sort of ahead of Tennessee, and then you have the BPI rankings, you have the SOR rankings. It's a bunch of, how they rank each and every team. You got Virginia is 14th. Duke is 10th. Michigan State is 12th. North Carolina is 6th. Kentucky's 29th. Tennessee is 65th. In the country, as far as strength of schedule, it may not mean a whole lot, but
yeah, I've got a number that's even worse than that.
But that's why I say they got to win one of these games. They have to beat LSU or Kentucky, one of these games. They can't go 0-for against these top 20, top 15.
And what they have ahead, even the teams that aren't ranked. So LSU's 21-5, Ole Miss is 18-8, Kentucky's 22-4, Mississippi State is 19-7, Auburn is 18-8. These are all really solid to good to maybe even very good basketball teams. Yeah. There's no layup. There's no more Vanderbilt on the schedule.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And I looking at realtimerpi.com, which is one of the websites you can get to uh-huh. the RPI, they have Tennessee strength of schedule as 73rd. So
it went down further.
But again, that's going to go up. I mean, that number is going to go up. Virginia, for example, a team they're competing with for the one seed, has the 22nd rated strength of schedule. Their only two losses are to Duke. Kansas has got the number one strength of schedule. Duke's number two. North Carolina could be competing potentially for that one seed. Their strength of schedule is going to help them. Number 7 in the nation. Gonzaga 50th in the nation. Michigan 56th in the nation. So, 73 is not great. It's not bad. That will go up as you add LSU and Kentucky and Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Auburn all to the schedule in the final few weeks. It's going to be a tough stretch. And I don't think, much like with the Preds or any one game, there is no real reason to overreact to any one outcome, because if you finish the season, to your point, Nick, 32-5, that's just an exceptional season. I mean, even the greatest teams lose a couple times. I mean, Duke's lost three times this year, so it's not that crazy of a thing. Even the best NFL teams, right, go 13-3 and they lose a couple of times and play a bad game. So it happens.
But we do, you know, we got to be fair in this, because we do say if a team that's, you know, say if one of these other mid-major teams, they have a 32-2 record, but their RPI or whatnot are in the 50s or the 60s. What do we say? Well, they hadn't played anybody.
Yeah.
So we understand why they're so low, or that when they have played someone, they haven't won. So we have to be fair, you know, in this situation.
Well, strength of schedule and RPI are different.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, strength of schedule.
They're very
okay.
different.
Strength of schedule and RPI. Just say
Tennessee's like 11 in the RPI. They're,
just to say a mid-major, you know, team has, you know, they're low in one or a little bit higher in another. We always go back to, well, they hadn't really played anybody. So we need to see how they fare in the tournament. They're not going to go far because they really hadn't played anybody. Or if they have played someone, they hadn't won.
Nevada, basically.
Yeah. Basically, that's UT. With the exception of Gonzaga, they, when they had an opportunity, I know they took Kansas into overtime, but when they had an opportunity to play these big teams, these, you know, top 10, top 15 teams,
I mean,
they beat
Louisville. Louisville's a top 15 team.
Louisville's not the same Louisville. They got ran out to
Tennessee. I agree.
Syracuse.
I think you're being unfair to Tennessee's schedule comparing it to like a Nevada or a Monmouth or a, you know, one of these mid-major teams. I mean, I think there's like Nevada's schedule is like 130th in the country.
But we got. So. I just got to be fair to this, because it's not like the SEC is some powerhouse. It's not.
It's pretty good this year.
It's competitive, but it's not really good.
I mean,
it's competitive because all of them kind of are sort of, with the exception of UT, Kansas, I mean, UT, Kentucky, and LSU. Everyone else is pretty much kind of the same, with the exception of Georgia, Georgia and Vanderbilt.
If they get eight teams in, though.
You think they'll get eight?
No, I don't think
they'll
get
eight.
If they
get seven or eight teams, I just think it's the second best league in America. I think it's behind the ACC.
I think it's ACC, Big Ten, and then you got a SEC.
Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn, those aren't even ranked teams, and those are tournament teams. I mean, those are quality. I just think it's deeper than it's ever been. Now, it also only got three bids in a couple of years ago. So it's important to note the difference between RPI and strength of schedule. Tennessee's RPI is ninth. They are 73rd in strength of schedule. So they are a top 10 team in the RPI. So it's not I think the problem is we entered the season with a concern about the team. And the only thing we've learned about that particular concern is that it still causes Tennessee to lose. That's the problem, is we are concerned about X, Y, and Z with Tennessee basketball, and it cost them against Kentucky. It could cost them against LSU. It cost them against Kansas. That's the issue, is that it's like a team that can't stop the run all year long, can't stop the run. Well, it doesn't mean you're not a great team, Oklahoma. You have a great team. But when you got into the game against Alabama, you couldn't cover anybody or stop the run, and Alabama was up 21-0, and that concern manifested itself in three touchdowns for the Tide, and you lost the game because of it. So it's Tennessee could still win everything, but the concerns are now sort of being justified, which I think is the concern, which is the actual concern if you're a Tennessee fan.
Coming up next, are the Predators showing signs of a team ready to maybe turn it around and make a push? We'll get into that. We've also got a little one-on-one with Colton Sissons, and I've just been alerted to a contemplation. A big second hour next.